You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
Anthropologists will tell you that our basic brain wiring and thus our behavior patterns haven't changed all that much from the time our consciousness first emerged and differentiated us from animals. When we lived in groups of 50 or so people we were mostly related to, who we knew inside and out all our lives, and who knew us inside and out. Tribes, clans, small villages, that sort of scale. You were known in these contexts as a multifaceted being in a tight web of other similar beings. Little could be hidden. Little could not be known. As these human-scale social systems grew, moved, and interacted with other groups of strangers, we needed to quickly figure out among those strangers who to avoid, who to marry. We learned to pick up nonverbal cues on the surface of the strangers we'd meet. Appearance, health, age, gender, apparent goodwill or lack of it. And so we learned to judge people quickly, impulsively, without the time and trouble of getting to know these other multifaceted beings as fully as we knew our own people. This proved to be a useful survival mechanism. We humans are smart little monkeys. We learn and adapt quickly to a changing environment. But fast forward to today's post-industrial, massively populated, mobile, fragmented, alienated world, and it may seem that our facility for judging others quickly on appearances has never been more necessary. I mean, think of all the strangers you might see in the course of your daily life in the same town. Judgment is a coping mechanism for processing information quickly. But our ancestors' brain, which still forms a deep part of our consciousness, never had to cope with anything like the scale and change and complexity of postmodern, post-industrial life. So is it any wonder our social discourse is becoming less and less civil? Like most coping mechanisms, our human facility for judging others quickly and on superficial cues has considerable downsides, too. Judging others further alienates us in an already alienating world. Judging others can blind us to our own shortcomings. It can make us smug and self-righteous. It can make us more anxious and defensive and dissatisfied and thus less peaceful than happy. So what can we do about managing this facility for judging others with greater restraint, greater discernment, perhaps even wisdom? First, consider. Do you like it when others judge you without fully knowing you even a little bit? What are some of the things that you've been judged on or would resent being reduced to? Age? Think you're judged on age automatically? What about gender? Appearance? Ethnicity? Socioeconomic status? Sexuality? I want you to think not just about the hurt, because that's a little too self-seeking here, but about the injustice of being judged superficially. You are not any one thing. As Walt Whitman said, contain multitudes. and how you are deserving of dignity and respect. That is our first principle, of course. So, what have you been hastily judged on, or fear you could be hastily judged on? Take a few minutes and just buzz about this with the people next to you. Okay, that's good. That's good to get just to break the ice and maybe get you started thinking about this a little bit from a personal level. I would never ask you to do anything I wouldn't also do. Would never do that. Go thou and do what I direct, and I will not do likewise. So I've done some reflection of my own on this question, and here's something I get judged on repeatedly that pains me, and I rather resent. No one chooses the nation their father decided to impregnate their mother in. And I resent being reduced to an ethnographic category. Yank is loaded with negative judgments, loudmouthed, rich, violent, entitled, arrogant, all the cultural stereotypes that I am then obliged to work to undo. These implicit judgments amount to a moral censure. Yanks are crass and gauche and up themselves and so need to be corrected whenever possible. Here's another. Smoker. Oh yes, I am one of the legion of the lepers of the 21st century. Unclean, unclean. And that too is loaded with moral censure. Oh, self-destructive, stupid, selfish, dirty, etc. It's a vice, and you're supposed to be a good guy, so you should quit. My usual reply to those that judge me for this is this: yes, smoking is certainly a vice, but so certainly is sanctimony. And I bet you any sum you care to name that I can quit smoking faster and for longer than you can quit being sanctimonious. I should know, I've quit smoking dozens of times. Only smokers will know how funny that is. But I too find it even harder to quit the reflex to sanctimoniously judge others based on appearances alone. I find that difficult too. Last month at Shady Grove, I offered a whole service on how hitchhiking taught me that you can never judge a book by its cover. You simply cannot know people as fast and as sure as you think you can. And yet I still have to catch myself. And we all do. We all do it. We all make sanctimonious judgments every day, judging the complex contents of a person's character by the cues on the surface. And would it surprise you to learn that studies show that church-going people, on the whole, are more readily inclined to moral judgment? I'm not saying you are necessarily, but why would that be? I guess mere church membership apparently allows us to live in the high ground of moral self-satisfaction. But as I never tire of reminding you, belonging to a church or attending church doesn't make you a better person any more than standing in a garage makes you a car. Still, I have found it easier to quit smoking dozens of times than to quit the judging reflex. For example, I live about 3 blocks that way. There's a house down on Coke Street, aptly named Coke Street. We jokingly call it the crack house, my friends and I. And because you look at it and you just think, yep, druggie. Cars up on blocks, furniture out the front, trash everywhere. But stop a minute. But just stop a minute. What do I actually know of them? Do I know anything about their financial circumstances? Do I know anything about their psychological or medical condition? Do I know anything about their life history? Do I know anything about the substance they're abusing, or if indeed they are? Do I in fact know they're not just, well, less meticulous at housekeeping than the rest of the bourgeois neighborhood? Have I ever even spoken to any of them? No, I know no such things. And yet, as if by Sherlock Holmesian deduction or ESP, I've got them all figured out at a glance. And then, if grace allows, I remember my Carl Jung, who said that those traits that we so despise in others are really projections of our own insecurities. Judging the crack house's apparently dirty, disgusting, selfish, and self-destructive addictive vice, which I don't even know is true, lets me off the hook for my own addictive vice. The Buddha, too, says our negative judgments are actually a mirror, a projection of the things we are not proud of in ourselves. Perhaps when Jesus said, "Judge not lest you be judged," this is what he means, not a threat of hellfire punishment, but a deep psychological truth that in our judgments of others, we reveal our true selves unawares. We are the glass houses we chuck stones about in. Be better, we demand of others. Why don't you be better? Okay, mate, you first. A more spiritually fruitful but less comfortable line of inquiry might be, what is it in me that prompts such judgmental condemnation? That introspection will actually lead you somewhere, but it's not a comfortable journey. There can be, however, no personal transformation without a degree of discomfort. This discomfort, this more, let's call it mindful discernment, is what I'm asking you to undertake this month. So just as we would not be judged, let us not be hasty in judging others. And that has, does it not, the familiar ring of the golden rule, doesn't it? This month of observance, like all our previous months of observance, is about daily practice, about lived religion, about how you live your values in the trenches of daily life, about the moment-to-moment choices we actually make that actually create the reality we end up living in. This reading by the late, great David Foster Wallace gives a skilled storyteller's take on how judgment can play out in an average day and what our choices really are. It's given by Barbara Willow.
This petty, frustrating stuff of daily life is exactly where the choice of choosing comes in. Because the traffic jams, the crowded aisles and long checkout lines give me time to think. And if I don't make a conscious decision about how to think and what to pay attention to, I'm going to be irritated and miserable every time I have to shop, because my natural default setting is the certainty that situations like this are really all about me, about my hungriness, my fatigue, my desire to just get home. And it's going to seem for all the world like everybody else is just in my way. And who are these people who are in my way? Look at how off-putting most of them are. How dull, cow-like, dead-eyed, and non-human they seem to be here in the checkout line. Or how annoying and rude it is that people are talking loudly on us in the middle of the line. And look how deeply unfair this is. I've worked really hard all day, and I'm starved, and I'm tired, and I can't even get home to eat and unwind because of these stupid people. Of course, if I'm in a more socially conscious form of my default setting, I can spend time in the end of the day traffic jam, being angry, disgusted at all the huge, stupid, lane-blocking SUVs and trucks burning their wasteful, selfish 40-gallon tanks of petrol. And I can dwell on the fact that the patriotic or religious bumper stickers always seem to be on the biggest, most disgustingly selfish vehicles, driven by the ugliest, most inconsiderate and aggressive drivers, who are usually talking on their cell phones as they cut people off in order to get just 20 stupid feet ahead in a traffic jam. And I can think about how our children's children will despise us for screwing up the climate, and how spoiled and stupid and disgusting we all are, and how it all sucks, and so on and so forth. Look, if I choose to think this way, fine. Lots of us do, except that thinking this way tends to be so easy and automatic, it doesn't have to be a choice. Thinking this way is my natural default setting. It's the automatic, unconscious way that I experience the boring, frustrating, crowded parts of my adult life. when I'm operating on the automatic, unconscious belief that I am the center of the world and that my immediate needs and feelings are what should determine the world's priorities. The thing is, there are obviously different ways to think about these kinds of situations. In this traffic, all these vehicles stuck and idling in my way, it's not impossible that some of these people in SUVs have been in horrible auto accidents in the past. And now they're driving so that they can find their driving so traumatic that their therapist has all but ordered them to get a huge, heavy SUV so that they can feel safe enough to drive. Or that ute that just cut me off, it's maybe being driven by a father whose little child is hurt or sick in the seat next to him, and he's trying to rush to hospital. He's, in a way, bigger, more legitimate hurry than I am. So it's actually I who'm in his way, and so on. Again, please don't think that I'm giving you moral advice, or that I'm saying you're supposed to think this way, or that anyone expects you to just automatically do it. Because it's hard. It takes will and lots of mental effort. And if you're like me, sometimes you won't be able to do it. Or some days you just flat out don't want to. But most days, if you're aware enough to give yourself a choice, you can choose to look differently at the dead-eyed, over-made-up lady who just screamed at her little child in the checkout line. Maybe she's not usually like this. Maybe she's been up three straight nights holding the hand of her husband who's dying of bone cancer. Or maybe this very lady is the low-wage clerk at the motor vehicles department who just yesterday helped your spouse resolve a nightmarish red tape problem through some small act of bureaucratic kindness. Of course, none of this is likely, but it's also not impossible. It just depends on what you want to consider. If you're automatically sure that you know what reality is and who and what is really important, if you want to operate on your default setting, then you, like me, will not consider possibilities that aren't pointless and annoying. But if you've really learned how to think, how to pay attention, then you will know you have other options. It'll actually experience a crowded, loud, slow, consumer hell type situation as not only meaningful, but sacred, on fire with the same force that lit the stars, compassion, love, the subsurface unity of all things. Well, not that the mystic stuff is necessarily true either. The only thing that's capital T true is you get to decide how you're going to see it.
Thanks, Barbara. Words of the late, great David Foster Wallace. Who in your daily round of living are you apt to judge, and for what? To help you get through this, just again, a little buzz time with your neighbor. Looking into yourself, who do you think swims into your awareness on a daily, weekly basis? Are you most inclined to leap towards judgment? I'll take a few minutes and just buzz with this a moment. Right. Good-o, thanks. Got you thinking a little bit about that, and I hope it's created some reflective time. In order to help us decide how we see others and ourselves better, let's draw a little inspiration from our next hymn, Blessed Spirit of My Life. Please stand as you're able.
Blessed Spirit of my life, give me strength through stress and strife.
So this month and once a year, I ask the entire community to concentrate on a single common spiritual practice in the days between the Sundays. Similar to Lent and Ramadan, months of observance prompt us to focus daily on a fixed term of spiritual improvement, like a diet. Unless, of course, you're fine with this already, you're perfect, so in which case this isn't for you. The key word here is spiritual practice. It means consciously choosing. And the more rationally minded among you will be happy to know that all spiritual practices are rooted in the reality of neuroplasticity, an emerging field of knowledge that shows that neural pathways can change in response to new habits. And so we become what we repeatedly do. Neuroplasticity is the clearest evidence yet of free will and self-determination. To give you a daily reminder during these months of observances, we pass out wristbands. These are silicone wristbands that you can wear in the shower, and in years past we've had Moment to Decide, and Love Yourself, and Viral Kindness, and We Become What We Do. I have to admit, this year our wristband supplier has let us down. But fear not, because they were the same people that did last year's wristbands of Viral Kindness, so they sent us another batch of Viral Kindness, thinking no difference. They didn't see the judge nod on them. So what I've got are those old wristbands, but when you come back in succeeding weeks, you can trade up the white wristband for a yellow one and so on, like judo. When you get better at it, you go up. So just for now, take one. Daily reminder for your daily spiritual practice for the next month. Take one, pass them on. Or take two, they're small. Of course, no one's forcing you to do this. In free religion, there can be no coercion. You won't be judged or excommunicated for not playing. But over the next two or three non-televised services, I'm going to be asking you to talk and share how this practice is going for you, what success you've had, what struggles you've experienced, and so on. So there'll be less preaching and more sharing planned, and if you've nothing to share, well, they'll be pretty short services. Sometimes that's a good thing. You may also want to share your experiences with the hashtag #JudgeNot on our church Facebook or Twitter feed with the hashtag #JudgeNot. Why judge not? Because this one wouldn't fit. Try to entertain more compassionate narratives about others didn't really work for us, so we went with judge not. Wouldn't fit on the wristband. But if you like, we can have that one made. It's just, it'll take another 6 months, as usual. Why do we practice months of observance like this, and why this particular one? Look, in the privacy of our own daily thoughts, who among us, does not feel the difference between our best, most generous, and compassionate impulses and our actual behavior? Who among us does not at least once in a while feel the difference between the thought and action we are capable of and the thought and action we let ourselves get by with? Like all other creatures, we human beings walk the landscape of a very unique and remarkable condition, something we hallow at the core of our being, and it is the core of our Unitarian movement, freedom. We are not bound by reflex, as animals are, but can rewire our mind's thought and feeling. We can choose to honor or to default, to be loyal to our values or betray them. We can strive for betterment, or we can habituate ourselves to mediocrity. We can help a neighbor in distress, or turn away from the ill luck that befalls them. Or indeed, we can choose to profit from their misfortune. We are unique in nature in being able to envision the good and the just, and also to be consistently hurtful and unjust. We get to choose. In our reflexive judgmentalism, we jettison the very freedom that makes us human, because in quick judgment, you begin with a conclusion about someone. Think about it. You begin with a conclusion. How free is that? Reason would counsel that we reserve judgment until we actually, you know stuff. And then we may become truly more tolerant rather than less. The Native Americans have a venerable saying, never judge a man until you have walked a mile in his moccasins. Do you know that one? This doesn't mean you knock him down, steal his shoes, go for a hike in them before coming back to call him a jerk. It means, I think, that we can't judge anybody until we can experience their life from the inside, which is, of course, not actually possible. So it calls us to an act of creative imagination, to envision, what if I were they? And this, too, has the ring of the golden rule, does it not? Does this mean everybody you meet this month gets a free pass for any discourtesy or malefaction towards you? Not at all. Here is the crucial distinction. Judge actions, sure. That was wasteful. Why did you litter there? That ruins the environment. Judge actions, by all means. But love people. You're capable of making that distinction. I know you are. This means humility at our own ignorance, which is vast when it comes to other people's lives. Generosity in according them the worth and dignity you would want for yourself. Constant, repeated practice will not make you perfect, but since the brain does adapt, you will change some, which is to say, as they say in the 12-step rooms, keep coming back. It only works if you work it. And church, after all, exists to transform people like you and me into the better selves we imagine we can yet become, more open to be loving. And love, by the way, is the one and only thing that actually changes the world. Love alone, making a habit of it, practicing it, freeing yourself from being judge, jury, and executioner for all the world's brokenness and idiocy. Love alone frees us from this. Not reason, not technology, not cute memes, not media, and certainly not smug, sanctimonious complacency. So this month of observance is not to mold you, not to punish you, but to free you to greater understanding, greater acceptance, greater compassion, in short, to greater spiritual maturity. And I promise I will be right in there with you, sharing with you, watching my thoughts, working at it, succeeding some, failing plenty, and growing, I hope, new pathways that make my default setting less judgy and more joyous. May we be so busy at the refining of our own character that we have little time left to judge others. Amen.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianessay@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching Essay Unitarians.